So, Scott, what did you have for breakfast this morning?
My breakfast this morning was some Starbucks coffee, vanilla latte, and an apple fritter. It was very, very unhealthy.
I like the apple fritters, though. They're good.
They are good. Yeah. They are good. Okay. Especially the Starbucks ones.
No, exactly. They're very good.
They actually get them from this specialty donut shop up in Seattle that like makes these amazing fresh donuts that I would like to go to one day when I am in Seattle, if I ever go to Seattle.
Road trip.
Okay. Road trip.
Okay, good, yeah. I had bacon this morning and only bacon. I got up and I realized there was no food in the house. I was supposed to go out last night because there was a grocery store on the way home from work. And I didn't because I had a friend and say, hey, want to go to this thing? And I said, sure. And then I went and then that didn't happen. Good thing about being single is that you can have bacon for breakfast and totally get away with it.
Now, the question is, though, how did you prepare the bacon?
Oh, I fried the bacon.
There you go.
Microwave bacon. That's for my parents. No real people do that. That's terrible.
That's true.
But yeah. The sad part about being single is that you actually aren't having bacon alone by choice. It's actually because you forget to go to the store.
You have no option.
Anyway, I'm Brian. This is the first podcast that we haven't really named yet. We're trying to figure out the name. So
no, and I'm Scott. And yeah, we don't have a name.
Okay, cool. The Brian and Scott experience? No. Scott and Brian experience?
I don't know.
You'd like that better.
That's interesting. Although I do like the whole bacon concept, to be honest with you.
Yeah, bacon is good. We both like bacon. I like bacon. You like bacon.
I like bacon.
Okay.
Oh,
everybody likes bacon.
Everybody likes it. Who doesn't like bacon?
Vegans.
That's true.
Yeah.
My people. But, you know.
But not you. You stand out. You like to go and, you know,
that's
like,
right.
You're your own man. I like that about you.
Exactly.
So anyway, this unnamed podcast that hopefully we'll figure this out by the end, we're going to be talking about technology stuff and geek stuff. And I'm clicking that pen. and food and just stuff.
Stuff.
So.
Stuff.
So there
stuff
we go.
Stuff that's out there, but a lot of tech.
Yeah, lots of tech stuff.
Because we're a couple of big
dorks.
Tech guys, I was gonna go with.
it's not a pejorative. It's 2011. We can get all away with that.
We're geeks.
Okay, there we go. We're geeks. It's empowering.
Yeah. It's nice.
So big news this week. Obviously, iPad 2.
iPad 2.
About a year out from the last one, they sold I think 15 million iPad 1s.
Big numbers.
Yeah, I guess biggest growing commercial product in electronics in history.
It's crazy.
Yeah, but I have to say,
All the iPad 2 enhancements. Mm-hmm. The one that I love the most is the case.
It's funny, like the case of all the things. You're like, okay, the iPad's great, but like, you know, the case is really, really fancy.
The case, I mean, it's so basic, but that is one of the coolest things I've ever seen, and I don't know why it's so neat.
You know what's cool about it, I think, is like apparently there's no – at the side where the magnets go, you know,
right,
onto it, completely smooth. So there's no like – there's no guiding. There's no like notches.
Right.
It actually just like, you know, knows that there's magnets in the iPad and in the case. So it just like lines itself up automatically.
And they're so strong that that's how it lined it up because there's no room for error.
Yeah. Apparently you can actually lift it up by the case.
Really?
If you shake it, it might be sketchy, but
right,
you can actually lift it up off the ground.
Strong.
And it's that strong to make it work.
Well, it's interesting because they took the technology they use in the iMacs. It looks like because the screens on the iMacs are not screwed in; they're in with magnets.
Oh, that's right. The whole front face.
Whole front face. So, like, I mean, I've taken them apart, and you have to use like a huge suction cup, and it just pops off. And then there's magnets all around that. But it's that. I mean, like, you have to really pull. I mean, I used a windshield suction cup to get it off. You do that, or like really strong tape.
Tape. Interesting.
Yeah, but iPad 2. New specs, big fan. I think it looks great. I want to get my hands on one.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I love the I mean, I didn't have any problems ergonomically with the first iPad in terms of like weight or like thinness or that kind of thing. But it's one of those things too, like when you see it and it's like that much thinner and like you kind of see it in action, it's like, I want to, you know, a little disappointing. And I felt like there were a lot of people just, you know, in the tech press, at least, they were a little disappointed at the get-go. Certain features that were lacking, that kind of thing.
True. But, you know, it was – Apple does that a lot. You know, they come out with the first-gen product and it's, you know, pretty revolutionary. And then they do the tweaks on the next generation, which basically just refine what they did.
Right. All about the iteration.
Yeah. And which it was needed. You know, like I don't think they could have jumped to what will probably be the iPad 3 later in the year
right
off the bat. They needed to go to – you have to go to the step.
Well, the same thing they did with the iPhone. It's like, you know, the iPhone 3G was a slightly different case. You know, a lot of people like the feel better. But other than 3G, basically like the same device. I don't think there was more RAM, I don't think, in the 3G versus the original iPhone
No.
as well. But it was interesting how everything got worked up. I think, you know, a lot of people wanted to see, like, you know, new features. There's obviously OS side stuff, iOS side stuff.
Sure,
that is, that is lacking at the moment. And it's an interesting position I think they find themselves in with the iPad, because they announced it in April and the iPhone comes out with the new iOS launch in June. Right. So what you end up having is like a cool hardware rev, but it's running last year's software. And so to certain people, you know, like myself, maybe because I have one already, it's like, well, it's a smaller thing that I already have. You know, I love it and it's really cool and I want to play with the neat cover. But I'm going to go buy the new one. There's not really a need yet, even though there's more RAM, which is going to be really helpful in Safari.
And I also think, like, with this second gen, they're not – I don't think – to me, it doesn't seem like their plan is to be selling to the people that already have the iPads, really. I think it's just to be selling more iPads.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's going to be an expansion, yeah. Which is interesting because everybody I know, you know, my friend Dan and lots of other people like that haven't gotten one yet, they saw the new one. They're like, oh. And they see the cover. They're like, oh.
Yeah.
And now they're going to pull trigger and go,
I mean,
get in it.
Leave it to Steve Jobs to make a magnetic polyurethane slip.
And leather. And leather.
And leather, too. But, like, be – this, I mean, it's just like, it's so mind-blowing that that is so cool. And it is. I'm excited by it. I can't, you know, not be.
Well, it's that thing that they do really, really well. And, like, it's easy to dismiss and it sounds kind of like dorky if certain people that are advocates of their products say it. But there's a certain, you know, they are all about not just, like, good experience, but the joy of the experience. So, like, you know, something's fun, that means you're going to go want to use it more. And that's going to bring you back, which is where I think is going to be an interesting, you know, butting of heads with, you know, the Android tablets that are coming out. Because I know you played with the Zoom.
I did play with the Zoom. It was very cool. It was, I mean, definitely, to me, it was an Android iPad. I mean, it was that good quality of a product as far as, you know, the limited time I had with it. I mean, it felt the same as the iPad almost, you know. It was just like – and it's probably a lot more similar than with the iPad too, because it had the front and rear facing camera.
Right.
It had premium speakers in it and stuff like that.
Definitely.
So, which was – interesting.
Yeah. Now, here, I had a question for you. And this, I think, comes down to, like, probably a fundamental difference in our, like, you know, just philosophy on computers.
Yeah.
But everything that I've seen – I haven't played with the Zoom yet, obviously. But everything I've seen about it, it seems that the approach of it is very, very specific and very much like a regular computer, what we think of as a personal computer now versus something new, i.e., you know, there's lots of, like, you know, menus to drill down. There's different, you know, things in different sides. There's different control panels, that kind of thing, where I feel like the Apple philosophy with their products, like them or hate them, is to basically have everything, like, you know, right up in their front for the user. You know, everything's kind of, like, streamlined. Everything's very, very intuitive, where I feel the Android, you know, isn't scared to go and basically, you know, keep things the way they were, perhaps, you know, for the last 15 years, in a sense. Not in a negative way.
Right.
Just in the sense that
– somewhat true in Android in general.
Yeah.
But I do have to say the Zoom – with the Honeycomb OS, it actually is a lot more – I mean, not a lot more. It is very tablet specific.
Right.
You know, and it is – really, it was a breeze to navigate. Mm-hmm. And even – I mean, definitely easier than just, like, an Android phone.
Right.
Which, I mean, I have my Android phone and I love it. But, you know, it's funny. Like, one of the best features of the Android – OS on the phones has been the notification system, and they changed it in the Honeycomb.
Oh, that's because it's, like, now just is it stuff,
you know, it's like the growl alerts on a Mac or on a PC too.
Sure,
you know that it's like this little pop up at the bottom, and it kind of stacks on itself and then goes away. but it's interesting. I guess they did it because, you know, when you're turning it, you know, you don't have a notification bar at the same place every time, I suppose.
Yeah, you could, though. But I also, it's my impression.
Weird. I don't know why they did it.
It's my impression that they're going in the – they're actually designing it, though, to be much more of a landscape device. Like, you know, the logos are clearly in the front. Like,
no,
the
one, it's definitely – everything is – you, like, even after using it for a minute, you want to put it in landscape.
Right.
Like, you don't want to hold it the other way. You want to hold it in landscape. And, like, even the camera app's designed that way. The music app is better that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything is – which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, also, like, you know, there are a lot of iOS apps that are really, really good in portrait. They have to use the whole popover philosophy with the menus and stuff. You can't go and – you can't use, you know, panels really, you know, in portrait. There's just not enough, you know, room from left to right.
Right.
But
the one thing I have to say is the iPad 2 lighter in weight?
Yeah, it's I want to say it's original one was 1.5 pounds. I think it's 1.33. I want to say.
Okay, because when I was sitting with the Zoom, I had a Zoom, I had an iPad, I had a Galaxy Tab, and something else.
And you didn't call me why again?
I was at a friend who works at Verizon, so she had all the devices, and you know, I was just holding the different ones or whatever, and man, the Zoom, I mean, in general, not, but the Zoom and the iPad were heavy. Were heavy, like, just to hold and sit there and play with, you know, like, holding.
Yeah.
You know, they get pretty heavy, so I would like to feel the new iPad, too, with a little lighter. And it wouldn't take a lot to make a big difference, I think.
Yeah. Well, if you even go and hold, like, you know, a Kindle to an iPad, you know, like, you know, I have both now, and it's night and day. And, like, but it's, obviously, it's very different devices, and I feel comfortable, like, throwing my Kindle around in ways I wouldn't want to throw my iPad around. Right. But, yeah, it's interesting how they're getting, you know, everything down, because there's, like, you know, I guess there's, like, you have the glass. That's going to be a certain amount of weight no matter what.
Right.
And you have the battery, but everything else seems to be shrinking. And even more so than the first gen iPad, it seems like it's much more battery and nothing else. And everything else is just like a tiny system on a chip.
That's the biggest
and,
part of it is the batteries.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to the HDMI out.
Yeah. The adapter. Which is funny because that was always the feature that I'm like, who cares about HDMI out? Like, whatever. But in terms of like presentations and that kind of stuff, I get it. I still maintain that, you know, wireless
is
any kind of like wireless, you know, video streaming is going to be the way we go. But I definitely understand for certain specific use cases why that would be a good thing. And got the adapter, people are happy, you know.
No, I think it's a cool feature, especially if, let's say, you have your iPad and you go to someone else's house. Mm-hmm. And you have your little adapter with you and you plug into their TV to show off a home movie or, you know, and they don't have any other wireless device, you know, which doesn't happen a lot.
I still maintain that, you know, people aren't going to be pulling plugs out of the back of their cable box to plug in their iPads all that often. But maybe I'm wrong.
Of the TVs now have HDMI on the side and you literally can just plug into the HDMI ports. I mean, that's what they're for. That's why they put them there. They have for your SD card for your camera. And
that's very true.
All along the side, especially like the Vizios and stuff like that, you know. In the consumer-friendly market. good market.
It's a very good market. But yeah, it was interesting. Like, I think all the upgrades, you know, tech spec wise, are going to be really, really great for the iPad 2 in the consumer market, and all the things that like people like me or you were probably like, oh, well, where's that notification system? Or where's there like a different multitasking implementation they're going to roll out?
That notification thing on the Apple products, it kills me. I keep feeling like they're going to. It's when they do eventually change it.
Yeah.
It's going to be some sort of game-changing thing. Like, well, Apple, come on, do something.
They've
please.
Taken so long, and they've not said a single word about it. And I feel like even cut and paste, they kind of like, you know, hinted that, yeah, we know it's out there and people want it and we're working on it. And this, there's been complete radio silence about it. And there's been not a single leak about iOS 5 that I've heard at least.
No, I haven't heard
like,
anything.
And usually some stuff leaks out.
You know
and
why
like,
I think, though, like there's so many other things right now. With the device coming out, the newest iOS that's out,
4.3,
the Gold Master that just came out, and the and Lion, like I think there's so many other things.
True, but
that
people...
it's just like you know people are trying to get the not as far in advance. You know, leaks.
Yeah, but I'm just surprised because it's you figure you know people are there's engineers working on it obviously like it's you
obviously.
Know the code's getting written it's all kind of happening so. The fact that it's not leaked yet, whatever they're doing, they have it under completely tight scrutiny. And like maybe they release the Line stuff kind of like as that aside just to kind of go and like do a sleight of hand. Like, oh, look over here at the new like, you know, burgeoning touch-friendly like Mac OS so that people wouldn't be digging for that because I do think you're right. Whatever they come out with, there's been no news on it.
Nothing.
There's got to be a lot of stuff. Like, you know, I think
– I feel like that too, yeah.
And I was listening to John Gruber and Dan Benjamin's podcast, and then Gruber's saying they think they're gonna have an iOS 5, you know, preview later this month, later in March, actually,
really?
Because
that
they get so all the developers can start to get up to speed with it and
I
stuff.
Guess that would make sense.
Because as always, when they go and like ship the OS, they want to have like everybody's apps like ready to go,
right?
So that's really really exciting. So I think that's going to be a big game changer, and we'll probably go and make the iPad 2. You know, we'll finally see the fully realized iPad 2 because right now it does feel like, you know, cool, you know, hardware upgrade.
It's a tweak.
Yeah, evolutionary, you know, evolutionary, but nothing revolutionary.
Yeah.
I think the feature set is going to be really kind of a wow.
That's,
it's probably going to come
that's
from.
That's going to be an iOS thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you know, speaking of those new features in the iOS, we have the home network music sharing.
Yes, in 4.3.
Is really cool.
Yeah,
I mean, you've tried it out. I've tried it out.
Yeah, I tried it out last night for the first time. And we were talking about this earlier. I didn't expect it to go. I thought it would be like a playlist. Because when you do home sharing on from one Mac to another, it's just like, you know, in the left sidebar, it becomes like, you know, it's like a purple Mac. And you're like, whatever.
You can choose that one or choose your own one.
Yeah, but for this thing, it's really, really smart. Because when you go in and select it, it actually takes over your entire, you know, iPod app basically on your mobile device. So where it's completely transparent. You don't know that you're in that, you know, remote.
Right, you're looking at the remote library.
Yeah.
And that's it.
And the UI is the same. Like, you know, you have your playlist, you have your artists, everything you can go by, but it's just you're accessing that remote library, which is very interesting because if they can go and do that over a Wi-Fi network, either, you know, now or with 4G, how's it going to open up into the rumors that, you know, you were talking about earlier with Mobile Me and a music locker and that kind of thing?
Right, which they're definitely – I mean, they're obviously working on something with this new, you know, campus that they've built that, you know, for the,
yeah,
the data
they,
storage.
They actually,
you know,
came out and said, I think, a couple weeks ago that that is going to be for Mobile Me and iTunes stuff.
And I think – I mean, obviously, like, in the news yesterday, they're – it came out that they are negotiating with all of the music companies for unlimited downloads of music you buy, which is fascinating because, you know, it's going to basically be you buy a new iPod, you hit a button and it downloads all your music onto it from, you know, your account in iTunes.
Interesting.
You get an iPad, it downloads it onto the iPad. You get a new computer, it downloads it onto your new computer. Your Apple TV, you know, connects in. It's like everything's going to – and eventually, since they're going to be storing it all up in there – they're already there. It's like a precursor to having the stream, all the music streaming.
Yeah,
because they're already giving you the license to have it stored with Apple.
Yeah. And the one thing that's going to be the big differentiator, if they can go and make that for all of your music, then it's like
that's
then,
the big thing.
Yeah,
because
that puts them, I think, you know, the big, you know, change between or the big, you know, kind of like, you know, trump card for the regular consumer market, I think, between, you know, iOS and, you know, and Android devices. And I'm talking specifically about people that, like, you know, want to go and just have their phone be their MP3 player,
right,
or like
right,
all that kind of stuff, is you can go. There's an easy way. There's iTunes. People already use it to get all of your media on there.
Yeah.
And there's not yet, you know, it's getting there. There's, like, you know, third-party solutions. Like they're getting there, Google is. They don't quite have that solution there yet.
No.
But they have all the other, you know, kind of wireless, you know, identity stuff, like, well, where all your bookmarks, all your, you know.
Which
all
is your, amazing for your phone and your, you know, if you have the Chrome web browser. I mean, like, on my Android phone, when I got I got my G2 after I had the G1 for a while, I turned it on, and within 10 minutes, I had all my apps. They were all on the phone. My email, everything was set up. I didn't have to do anything except sign into Google.
Yeah. And if they can go and do, if Apple can go and recreate that, and I think that's where they're going with, like, Mobile Me. Mobile Me, all the boxes have been pulled out of retail. It looks like that's going to be a free service
right, yeah,
very
I feel
soon.
Like that's what's
people thought it was going to pop up at the iPad 2 event, but it didn't, probably because it's not ready, because I would think maybe these music deals are going and that they want that to be part of the service.
Yeah,
like, have it be a music locker.
I think that's going to be a game changer. I mean, it's also just segueing a little bit about the whole music stuff. One of the big things that's happening are all these subscription services that are starting to actually, you know, become – I mean, they've been around for a long time,
yeah,
but they've been just crap. And now they're actually starting to become something.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think when Spotify hits the U.S., it's going to be a big deal.
It's going to be a big thing. I mean, and it's it is one of those things – I'm not sure. And this,
I mean, people
there's no,
are already
no
using
to...
Pandora all the time. I mean, like, you know, I around to different offices and everybody is streaming Pandora constantly.
Totally.
I mean, it's got to be eating into, you know, just downloads and regular music sales.
Yeah. Well, that's a weird thing. And this is definitely getting off topic a bit, but it's one of those things where how smart is the music industry going to be if they kind of say, okay, if they say to Apple, okay, cool, we're going to give you the license where people can go and, like, have all their music up there. You can store it, even if they maybe didn't buy it from us. We're going to not, you know, hold you, you know, legally responsible if somebody has a ripped version of a Tupac album,
right,
and they have it on your servers and they download
right,
it. We're not going to come after you for that. Then it's smart because that basically goes and locks people into an ecosystem that encourages purchasing of music, you know,
exactly,
iTunes.
Exactly, I agree.
But if they don't, if they kind of, like, say, like, no, we don't want to do that because that encourages piracy and we want to go and, like, worry about, like, you know, third-party services, whatever, all that's going to happen is you're going to, people are just going to say, fine, you know, screw you, we're going to go for streaming services or free streaming services, like,
yeah,
you know, like Groove Shark, like,
yeah, exactly,
which, you know, another huge one people use at work, and it's, nobody's getting licenses, you know, license fees from that.
No, I mean, it's, you know, the music industry has a history of not being smart in these realms. I'm, you know, hopefully they maybe have learned a little, like, in recent years they've seemed to be,
yeah,
have learned their lesson, but it's like,
but it's hard to tell though. I think media companies in general have not. I know a lot of people were like,
oh,
when,
yeah,
when Hulu came out, it was like, oh, this is great, they're finally getting it. And truthfully, I think Hulu was a defensive measure. So basically,
oh, it definitely was.
So media companies worried about, you know, BitTorrent and pirating in general, taking, you know, devaluing their content.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, you know, said, we don't want to go down the MP3 route. But all they did is they put up a free service that people could watch their media for free, and so it still got devalued. Like, they fundamentally
right,
don't get the psychology of the digital consumer, I think, in 2011 or whatever.
Yeah.
And so now they're freaking out. They're like, oh, we have to monetize Hulu in a better way. And it's like, the, you know, it's already game over. Like, people already think they should get your stuff for free if they have a subscription either to Netflix
right,
or a cable subscription or to anything.
I think that – speaking of that, and we're totally going off topic, but it's interesting, so that's
yeah,
fine. Speaking of that, I think that may be where the future lies, is the subscription with like the cable companies, like if like what they're doing with Comcast, with their Xfinity Play Anywhere and AT&T, where if you pay for your cable service, you can watch any of those things online on a device. That's interesting because you're already paying. So why not let you watch it wherever you want to watch it?
I'd say it's still a defensive measure, though. They're trying to protect their core business of, i.e., the cable subscriptions with these added value feature
that's
sets.
True too. Yeah, that
where
is true
I think the real truth is what people really, really want is to be able to go and buy just the content they want. I don't want 500 channels of wrestling and Sumerian, like bridal chants
programming.
I want the 5 channels I want or the 10 channels I want with the 15 programs I want, and I don't want to pay for anything else than that. And I will probably pay a premium for those channels.
I would do that too.
I would think.
We haven't seen that approaching yet, which would be nice. It would be really nice.
Well, I think Apple and Google would like to both do that. I think the problem, once again, it comes down to like the licensing thing. Obviously, media companies have fought Apple like tooth and nail in terms of, iTunes subscription rates and even like rentals on TV shows. Yeah. You have to go and play on the field that the consumer wants to play on, because eventually, with the internet, the customer is going to win out on that, in that battle. They're going to get to have it the way they want to. So you can either get on board and find a way to monetize that, or try to fight the future and end up getting screwed.
Right, which is definitely going to happen I think a lot of these, big media corporations are going to screw themselves.
Because, the truth is, I think it's kind of interesting. There was never, and once again, really way off topic, but interesting. Right. There was never a generation before or generations before that saw such a fundamental swing in the perception of content, of media, of that kind of stuff. It's a totally new thing, and it's rapidly evolving in a way that's totally unprecedented. Like, 10 years ago, there was no iTunes Music Store.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
Like, there was no real viable channel to go and buy online music.
There was nothing. There was Napster.
Yeah. And if you think about that, how quickly it's changed and like how quickly, it's changed. How do you think about CD? Like, when's the last time you bought a CD?
Oh, I can't even remember.
Right.
I can't even remember. Now, there is a generation gap with that because CDs still sell.
But we're in the middle of that. Like, I'm 30.
It's definitely pushing away to very soon not being anything.
Yeah. Like, my parents buy CDs. If there's a band I really, really like, I'm 35. I still buy CDs because I like to have the artwork and the whole thing. I like to hold it and listen to the whole record because, I'm a dinosaur apparently. I'm on the high end of like the Y generation, but millennials, there's never been a CD. They've never bought CDs.
The generation below us, not even music, but they don't watch TV.
You mean on TV?
On TV.
Yeah.
No, the kids now that are in high school and stuff like that, it is watching stuff online. They find the show that they want to watch and they watch it online. They don't sit with their parents in the living room and watch the shows, and it's just crazy to me. I mean, I get it, and I probably would have been that way if I was that age right now.
Totally.
Absolutely. So it's really interesting.
Well, if kids grow up having all the media they want, whenever they want it, however they want it, that's just the way they view the world. And you can't undo that. You can't go and reprogram people. And you can't do it by lawsuits.
You've got to be creative in a way to monetize it.
Exactly. And there's a great article, not a great article, it was a depressing article in Daily Variety week before last, I think, about they'd seen a big the Motion Picture Association of America had seen a big uptick in piracy as Oscar season, got near.
Right.
And they always see that because there's kind of like, promotional buzz. Movies are more in the news. People want to check them out more. But they were basically decrying how this is a terrible thing and like blah, 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 and how some people were threatening lawsuits, which is what the recording industry had done for a lot of time. And it's like, that's free promotion. People, if you make a frictionless experience where people can go and get your product, for a couple bucks, where it's easier for them than downloading, they'll do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
People will always choose people always choose easy over complicated, even if it means a couple dollars.
Right.
Not everybody, but a lot of people.
Oh, I mean, I'll be the first to admit it, back in the day, Napster time, everyone was downloading free music, it was just, nobody knew what it was. And it always pissed me off that there was never a legal, way to do it, a legal, easy way to do it.
Right.
And finally, in recent years, there is, and I wouldn't even entertain the thought of pirating music because there's no need. It's easy and I can pay for it faster, quicker, better quality than the pirated music.
Right.
And that's what the movie and TV industry has to figure out, how to make to get that mindset, because I think that's everybody's mindset now, really.
Absolutely.
For the most part. I mean, not everybody, but the majority.
I think it absolutely is. And I think it's also been exacerbated by things like by Netflix. If you have a Netflix subscription, you know that maybe not today, but in 6 months, you're going to go and be able to get a DVD of whatever's on TV today. So there's a whole mental thing that happens where you don't really feel that bad about maybe like BitTorrenting, like, you know, Dexter tonight, because you're going to be able to get the DVD in 6 months anyway, because you're already kind of paying for it.
You're already paying for it.
So it's okay. And I don't want to go and have to have a $60 base like DirecTV subscription and then pay $10 for, you know, Showtime on top of that. So,
right.
So it becomes like flexible where you can go and do it.
Exactly.
And that's the playing field. But if once again, you know, HBO's talked about doing a digital only, like IE to iPads, you know, subscription.
I saw that.
100% down. Sign me up. I will do that. I'll spend $10 a month for one show.
I would too.
See it where I want to see it on my own terms.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I agree. Okay, we should. Yeah, let's get back on topic a little bit. That was a great conversation. I have to say, I love talking about that stuff, but we totally segued all over the map there. But we're not passionate people at all.
Well, obviously, I think we just have to make this about tech and film and TV and music. That's just what we have to do. No, apparently,
that's where it's going to end up going.
Yeah.
Well, we started to talk about.
We started talking about Mobile Me stuff and how, like, you know, that was going to be a competitor to Google's, you know, approach of having everything be like, you know, a downloadable single digital identity,
right.
Which I think they need to do, which I think, because that's obviously a huge advantage for them. And if they can go and implement all your music library to that, that's going to be a great one up for them.
I mean, it's like, you know, and if they do that, you know, it's like you get a new computer, you sign in with your Mobile Me account.
And all your stuff.
You're good to go.
Yeah, yeah. And you were talking about, you know, you got a CR48, the Google Chrome OS laptop.
Yeah, I applied
recently
for the beta test of that. And out of nowhere, they had already sent them all out. And out of the blue, a couple weeks ago, I got to get this package in the mail, this nondescript package with all these weird gears on it. I'm like, what is this? I'm like, I didn't order anything. Like, did somebody send me a gift? Oh, this is cool. It's not my birthday. But and I opened it up, and it was the Google Chrome, laptop. And I was really excited. I opened it up. It's really cool. Nice feel.
Yeah, I have to say, it does look like, I mean, one of your friends said this, it does look like a CIA Ninja laptop.
Yeah,
it is.
There are no markings on this thing anywhere. I mean, like, there's no serial number. There's no text writing anywhere on this device. It's pretty freaky. It's like, and I obviously I'm like, yeah, they're tracking everything I do on this.
They don't need your serial number. They have your complete identity.
Right. But the cool thing was, I opened it up. It says sign into your Google account, and I use Chrome on my laptop, you know. So, and I have a Google account for my phone. I sign in with my Gmail account, and boom, all my bookmarks, all my saved passwords, all my, you know, favorites, all the apps that I've used in the Chrome, there, instant.
Awesome.
I was up and running right away. That was cool. After playing with the device for a short amount of time, I kept trying to think of what I thought about it. Of how to put it into words. And I just, the only word I kept coming up with was pointless. This device is pointless.
Now, is that because there's not a suite of apps that you can be like truly productive for it? Or is that because of the current marketplace?
I think it's because of the current marketplace, because I think what you would use this for is what you would use a tablet for. And when they announced what these were, like, you know, they announced the Google Chrome, and really, the iPad had just started to, you know, come out and stuff like that. I would not buy something like this over a tablet. I think I would get a tablet because they're the same use. They're the same use at home, at least.
Right.
You know, I mean, like this. Right now, I have it sitting on my couch. Every now and then, I grab it. I look something up. Well, yeah, if I had an iPad or a Zoom or whatever sitting on the couch, that's what I would use that for.
And do you find a tablet experience, you know, because that's basically a laptop experience in terms of just like web navigation and whatnot.
True, true. You know, the problem is like you don't – because it's just – and you even get this more on an iPhone or an iPad. Like if I want to be signed into AIM and IMing people and be surfing the web, and you can't really – do the multitasking on here. You can have multiple tabs, but that's it. You know, like the apps that Google has, kind of interesting, but they're just glorified HTML5 web pages, it seems like.
Right.
I mean, like, there's no aside that they really only show up right in Chrome. In general, there's no reason that those pages couldn't be on any web browser if they were designed that way.
Right.
You know, so it's just a weird experience, because it's I wanted to like it a lot. And I like it in general, but I just don't see a use for it. Yeah. I think it's a model that in a world where you're getting these tablet devices, I really think this is in competition with the tablet, this concept.
You think tablet are actually just mobile OSs?
Mobile OSs, but more, I think more of a tablet, because this.
Because that's like a bigger device and.
Yeah. Okay. Like, you know, this is, in general, let's say you had a family of four at home, and you had your business computer and you had whatever, and then you had another computer that everyone just kind of used to look up stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This would be great. I'm hitting the microphones all over the place. You know, this would be great, but once again, it's not a powerful machine. There's no storage on it. It feels very limited. Conceptually, I was into it when they first announced it, and I thought it was cool, but it just doesn't.
Well, the idea of a disposable computer essentially is really, really interesting. The idea of a completely cloud-centric computing lifestyle where you can be on any device and you can have your complete experience there. If you know, all you need is a password. That's very, very exciting.
Agreed.
But it seems like
they don't have it right.
Well, it seems like it's the same problem that there is. You know, it's also true in, like, I think the mobile market, maybe not phones but tablets. Is ultimately it's always a question of, you know, apps. You know, like what can you do with it? It's like that's amazing, like for browsing and that kind of stuff, because that's all there and that's all, you know, in the box from Google.
It's a web browser in a box.
Yeah.
that's all this is.
And it's like there hasn't been – I haven't seen – at least I haven't played with anything. I mean, I use Chrome on my Mac as well and at work, but I haven't like found any apps that have been like cool or exciting. Like there's nothing that's, you know, that's better than a web page unto itself.
I had the Moog music app on here, which is kind of nice, and the USA Today app, which is fine. Mm-hmm. But it's – you know, I mean, like look at – this is the USA Today app on here.
Looks like the website.
It's just a little bit optimized version of the USA Today website. You know, it's nothing. It's frustrating. It's frustrating because I thought it was such a cool idea, and in use, it's not.
Right.
It's not. I think this thing is DOA.
It's interesting. I wonder if there's not a place for it, not today, but in a few years. There's an interesting article I read from Wednesday, and I'm going to butcher this guy's name. It's Farouk Atez, I think. He's from the Netherlands. I apologize, Farouk, if you somehow end up listening to this. But his root website is Farukata, Farukat.es. But he's talking about he's a developer, and he's talking about, you know, native mobile apps versus, you know, web-based apps, and how, you know, mm-hmm. long story short, there's great potential, and eventually things will get to be web-based apps. But right now, just in terms of API support, like, you know, hardware access, that kind of thing, it's just not there yet. You can't have a really competing experience. And that seems to be like a victim of that. It's like if you could go and have – but the Chrome notebook is even, you know, in worse shape than like a tablet or a phone, because it's competing against real notebooks, you know?
Right.
You know,
right.
So it's like you have to, you know, whatever, you know, the iPad's out or the Zoom gets to be, like, that's – it's its own category. They can define their own, you know, you know, what they can do and whatnot. But that has to go and compete against my laptop running, you know, Photoshop and everything else.
Right.
So unless it can go and be that powerful, and web apps are that powerful, and they're clearly not today, why?
I mean, unless this thing comes out and it's $100 –
But even then,
maybe, and that's it, and it's just a maybe. You know what I mean? Like that's the only way I see a possibility of it. But even then, why? Who's? I don't see who's going to be buying something like this. I just don't see it. You know, and especially when they're talking. You know, we were talking earlier. Asus has said that they're going to make netbooks that run the Android.
Mm-hmm.
So why not? I would love this if this had Android. I could have all the Android features and this full web browser. Same thing.
Right.
The web browser on the Zoom
is
full Chrome, and it's great.
Very cool.
Tabs. I mean, literally, I felt no different than using Chrome on the desktop. It was completely full featured.
Awesome.
Which is really nice.
Yeah.
Like, I was a big fan of how they did that.
Very cool.
For the web browser, which is pretty neat. So that's my little Chrome experience so far.
It's interesting. There's, like, you know, obviously part of Google's philosophy just, you know, is ubiquity. Do they want to have, like, you know, something everywhere so they can, you know, if they're omnipresent, that's more opportunities to go and, like, you know, not to be cynical, but, like,
monetize,
you know,
monetize search results.
Yeah. I mean, that's how they make their money. They do a lot of great innovation, you know, to get to that place. But it's almost like they wanted to have, you know, a desktop, something to be somewhat in the desktop space. Maybe there's not a need for it. Like, you know, I've talked before that might be, makes sense for an enterprise use if there's a, you know, a company is running basically all web-based, you know, applications anyway.
That's true.
Having to go and deploy like a bunch of Dell boxes, they can just do that for like $150-$200.
That is true. I think that concept is good, but not with this OS. Like, I think this is the wrong way to do it.
But if you only have a single purpose, though, basically if all you're running is like one application all day long.
Well, that's true.
It's a web-based application.
No, that's a good point. That's a good point. It was interesting. There was a reporter online that wrote a little article about Chrome recently because his laptop died and he had to get an article out.
Mm-hmm.
And he had gotten the Chrome a few months ago, and he's like, he just grabbed it, you know, from the couch or whatever and signed in. And he's like, it was amazing. He's like, I was actually able to write my article, post it up. I had all my bookmarks while I waited to get a new computer. He's like, that was interesting. I don't foresee this as an everyday use, but it was cool to log in and be up and running.
Yeah.
You know, so like that concept, which is the mobile me looks like it's going that way, and the signing into to have all, you know, your preferences and your music, if it's mobile me right there, that concept, brilliant.
Well, it's really, really cool. It's and it's a different thing than what we really talk about the cloud. The concept of the cloud has been, you know, like, oh, you basically have like a thin client or whatever. You have a really, really limited device and everything actually lives up there. The idea of actually having your computer be still centric to you because it's a personal device ultimately, and even more so with tablets and phones.
But syncing up through the cloud.
But like having it be like a backup for your existence basically. Obviously, you're going to be doing a lot of web-based services and that kind of stuff. But still having like the, you know, the main thrust of it living with your computer makes a lot more sense for the short term.
And that's like, you know, like a service like Dropbox.
Yeah.
Is that.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic.
Definitely.
I mean, and they do it right. Literally. And I think you just touched on something really interesting, is that having the cloud be the place where everything lives and you work off of the cloud, as opposed to the cloud being where everything syncs through to sync up all your devices, not to be working off.
Correct.
You know what I mean?
And there's also a psychological element too. And maybe this is a generational thing. And maybe
have that too. You want to own what you bought.
Yeah. I want to know what I bought. I want to have it here, safe, protected, my stuff.
Yeah.
If I can back it up through a secure place, cool. But otherwise, it's fine. Now, maybe the millennials feel differently. Maybe this is like our CD battle.
It's possible.
But
I feel that way too. I absolutely feel that way.
And ultimately, I feel like, you know, we are the people with the disposable income buying this stuff for the moment. You know,
right.
10 years, maybe, you know, when the 18-year-olds are buying this stuff, maybe that's going to be different. But for the moment, it's definitely interesting. We are tearing through time.
Are we?
We are like tearing through time. We have like two more topics we haven't even hit yet.
Are we at the end?
We're like at 31.
We're at 31?
We're over that actually because I didn't start the timer until later.
All right.
So there's one thing I know you wanted to talk about. There's something about food.
Yes, food. I have a little obsession with chocolate chip cookies, so I'm going to quickly go to this. And I wish if I could think of the website, and maybe I can pull it up. But basically, I got sent a picture and a recipe of one of the most ridiculous, amazing cookies I've ever seen in my life. And it was basically a cookie within a cookie.
Interesting.
A chocolate chip cookie that had an Oreo baked in the middle.
Okay, now I've seen you eat things like fried butter, so I know your devotion. I know your devotion to amazing foodstuffs. I'm going to be honest, that sounds horrifying.
I'm telling you, it looked, and I haven't tried it, but it looked amazing. It looked amazing, and the recipe showed how to do this. And if we end up with a website, I'll post a link so people can see what I'm talking about.
Put it in the show notes, yeah.
But right now, I can't pull it up, so I can't say what the site is, but it had my mouth watering, let me tell you.
Speaking of cookies, have you tried Specialties cookies?
No, I have not tried Specialties
cookies. Okay, I don't know. I'm giving a shout out for no reason here. Basically, it was a place. I guess they're all over the place. They're in San Francisco. They're here in L.A. There's one store on Santa Monica Boulevard near the 405. Have a lot of great sandwiches as well.
Uh-huh.
The best cookies I have ever had in my life. Better than Delicious. Better than, you know, a lot of great cookie places. There's a peanut butter that's good but not mind-blowing. There is a chocolate chip cookie and a chocolate chip chunk with peanut butter, I think.
Wow.
They feel like they weigh about 5 pounds. Like, they're huge, monstrous cookies, but
right.
I don't know how they do it. You bite into the cookie, the chocolate chip, and it's cooked. It's not like it's fresh out of the oven, but the chocolate chips are somehow melting inside, and like they ooze and goo, and it is luxurious.
Wow. I'm just going to show you a picture of what one kind of looks like.
Okay, Scott has shown me a picture of this cookie. It is it basically looks like a hamburger bun on top of an Oreo. Amazing, yes. Horrifying, very likely.
Something one must try, let me tell you.
this from the man who eats the fried butter. I'm just saying.
Once again, we're not supposed to.
It's already out there. It's too late.
I did eat, although I will. I'm going to throw this out. Brian tried the fried butter too.
The fried butter was good, but you were the driver of the fried butter train.
And that's
you were the conductor.
People may start to learn about me that I have. I like food a little bit, just a little bit.
A little bit.
Looking at me, you would not know, but I eat like crazy.
Bastard.
All right. Well, I mean, I think this has been a successful first outing.
Yeah, definitely.
I think we still don't have a name.
We still don't have a name.
Unnamed.
You know what? We'll figure out a name and then we'll post it. And we'll tell our friends.
People will join us for the next one. We'll have six listeners out there in the podcast.
Well, we can do that too. We can, if we do Skype, we can go and record the video feed.
That's true. Yeah. I'm not ready for that yet.
Yeah, I'm saying like I don't really want to go. I haven't shaved in about 4 days right now. Not looking good. Don't really want to do that. I like the audio only.
Yeah, me too. Well, hopefully we'll be back in a week or so with some more interesting things. You know, what's that?
I was going to say, originally we talked about maybe doing it every other week. I think we could do this weekly, though.
We could definitely do it weekly. You know, we'll see. There's always interesting things going on in the tech world and movies and music and food, and I think we're going to expand this as we go on.
Exactly. And so if you've enjoyed this, thanks for listening. We appreciate you hanging out with us.
Thank you very much.
And subscribe up in iTunes, and you'll get a heads up when the next one comes out.
Have a good day.
Thanks so much. Take care.